state lawmakers approved a plan last month to spend millions of dollars to combat the opioid epidemic in Wisconsin, and the funding's part of a national settlement with four companies accused of fueling the crisis. The state's share this year is about $31 million with funding for treatment and recovery facilities, tribal nations, and the overdose treatment drug Narcan. We're going to hear a few perspectives on this plan, starting with one of the Republican lawmakers who worked on the version that was ultimately approved. But we also want to hear from you at 1-800-642-1234. What do you want to see this opioid settlement money go to? How has opioid addiction touched your life or your family's? And where do you think funding could make the biggest difference now? 1-800-642-1234 or email us ideas at WPR.org. Our guest, Mark Bourne, Republican representing the state's 39th Assembly District, which includes Beaver Dam. Also the co-chair of the legislature's Joint Finance Committee, Representative Bourne, thanks for joining us this afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me on.
If you would, please start by walking us through some of the things that you funded with this $31 million in settlement money.
Well, we knew that this is an important issue. It's something that the legislative Republicans have been working on for about a decade. And so we wanted to build on some of the successes of our HOPE agenda. We wanted to focus on a variety of areas in prevention and treatment and education, make sure that we were focused on specific programs that we knew could be successful and that would not take a lot of time to develop. Because especially with this first round of settlement money, we wanted to get some money into the communities more quickly and really start to address more of these issues. We know that drug use and overdoses have increased both during the pandemic and since then, and really wanted to make sure that we got some real bang for the buck, so to speak. And so whether it be expanding the Narcan Direct program, providing some funding for fentanyl strips, you know, to help directly with those overdoses, partnering with our K-12 partners, as well as groups like the Boys and Girls Club on education initiatives that are available to help, and putting more money into things like medication-assisted treatment, which we know has had good successes in communities as well as in jails, a variety of things. Those are a few of them, but mostly the focus was on trying to make sure that we went into programs that either existed or community partners that existed that we knew could be helpful in immediately trying to address this issue.
And Representative Bourne, you mentioned the overdose treatment drug Narcan. Could you tell us how the funding specifically for Narcan would be used?
There's a current program, and this plan puts another $3 million into that program to get Narcan more widely available in our communities. One of the things it prioritizes is law enforcement and first responders. That's something that was very important as we worked on our plan that was different than what the administration put forward. We know that our public safety partners, whether it be police, sheriff, fire, EMS, those are the boots on the ground in our communities. Those are the men and women that are on the front lines helping us in a variety of ways. And this situation with overdoses and combating opioids is certainly an area where they're on the front lines. And so the Narcan program is one where they can be immediately there to help save lives. And so it's a program we have, and this expands on it, uses some of these funds to expand on that.
Representative Mark Bourne, our guest. He is a co-chair of the legislature's Joint Finance Committee as they have approved the settlement spending for the settlement funds for this year and the opioid legal settlement money for Wisconsin. And if you have questions, 1-800-642-1234. But I have to ask you, Representative Bourne, if the $3 million for Narcan spending, additional spending, would be enough to make a meaningful difference across the state of Wisconsin?
Yeah, we think so. I mean, we think that we wanted to make sure we impacted things in a variety of areas, and so that's obviously one. But, yeah, I think that that'll have a meaningful impact, and certainly our community partners thought that and part of that discussion. And this is one area where we also agree with the Department of Health. Their funding was at the same level.
And Representative Bourne, funding for family support programs was taken out by the Joint Finance Committee. Why did they make that decision?
Yeah, like I mentioned, we wanted to work on programs that were already established or partners in our communities that already had established programs with this first round of funds. There will be additional settlement funds and additional plans in the coming years, and some of these new programs might rise to the top with those or with other funding. But we wanted to make sure that we had more of an immediate impact and not just have bureaucrats in Madison creating new programs and spending months or years trying to develop a new program. So that was really the focus of partnering with, you know, groups like the Boys and Girls Club, our public safety partners, medication-assisted treatment partners, providers throughout the state, organizations like Meda House in the Milwaukee area. There are a lot of partners out there already, both public and private sector, that are doing great work in this area, and we felt it made more sense to focus this first round of settlement money on those type of programs and not spend months or years developing the new programs right now.
Let's go to Philomena now over the phone at 1-800-642-1234. She's in Bad River. And Philomena, you're on the air with Representative Mark Bourne.
Hi there. Thank you for taking my call. So the Bad River community has had an active harm reduction program in place for the last 8 years. And our focus with Narcan procurement and provision has been with people who use drugs. This has resulted in thousands of overdose reversals, many, many more than what have been accomplished by law enforcement officers. So, you know, I'm hoping that the legislature, the Joint Finance Committee, prioritize.
Oh, I think we lost you, Philomena, and I apologize.
Opioid settlement.
We lost you there for a second, but Representative Bourne, with the time we have, is there money set aside for our native tribes in Wisconsin in dealing with the opioid addiction?
Definitely. They would both be, since she was specifically looking at Narcan, that would be available in that. But also there's $6 million targeted specifically to the tribal nations, and something that certainly they could develop those programs with those funds as well.
Representative Bourne, you've got a background with the Dodge County Sheriff's Office, as I understand it. And from a law enforcement perspective, what do we do about addiction? Narcan saves lives, but what do we do to end the cycle of addiction? And what role do you see law enforcement playing in that?
I think they play a major role, and that's why we prioritize grant funding for law enforcement when the Evers administration targeted them for $0. And that's because we know that those are the folks in our communities right there that can help. And I think too often people think of law enforcement as only the arrest or the enforcing the crime part of it. And instead, they're usually parts of the education program and the prevention programs. And if I think about in my community, all of the places where you can dispose of your narcotics that you don't need anymore at home are in sheriff's departments and police departments. They're not something that you find at a state building or at a human services building, because these law enforcement and public safety folks are all over our state. So there are logical places to be helpful. Another one is the sheriff's department, which, as you mentioned, I used to work for years ago. I worked in the jail. The medication-assisted treatment in the jail is a huge thing. We're having success with that in Dodge County, and I know in counties throughout Wisconsin, and some of those grant funds could be used to expand those programs and help people get off of these drugs and when they get out, not get back on them and be productive members of society. Those are huge opportunities for a variety of problems in our system.
Representative Bourne, thanks for being with us this afternoon.
Thanks for having me.
State Representative Mark Bourne of Beaver Dam with us today to talk about the Republican written plan to spend millions of dollars in opioid settlement funds. That plan was approved by the legislature's Joint Finance Committee last month. Now up next, we'll hear more perspectives on the plan from the head of an addiction advocacy group in Beloit and an expert on the opioid epidemic. And you can join in as well at 1-800-642-1234. Is opioid addiction something you've experienced or someone in your life has? And what resources helped you? How do you beat the cycle of addiction? 1-800-642-1234. Sharing your story may help others. Email us if you wish. ideas@wpr.org. Our conversation continues coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Lee Rayburn, and we're picking up our conversation about a plan that state lawmakers recently passed to spend millions of dollars in opioid settlement money to deal with the addiction across the state. And we'd like to hear your story at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Our next guest, Tracy Burtis, is the founder and president of the Beloit advocacy group Families Fighting Addiction. Tracy, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Also joining us, Dr. Elizabeth Salisbury Afshar, specializing in opioid addiction medicine and public health at UW Health. Dr. Salisbury Afshar, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
And I'm going to start with you, Doctor. Does the spending plan passed by the state legislature fund the kinds of things that Wisconsin needs to make a difference in this opioid epidemic?
That's a great question, and I think one that can be hard to answer because, sadly, there's so much work that we still have to do. You know, I was in many ways pleased to see that they were thinking broadly in terms of covering prevention, treatment services, recovery supports, and harm reduction services. But, you know, at this early stage, I think so much of the devil's in the details, as they say, in terms of how things are implemented, how we are strategically considering which communities have been impacted, and finally, really ensuring that community has voice and how these funds are being distributed and spent, and making sure that we have key players, particularly people with lived experience themselves, as well as families and friends of those individuals at the table as we're thinking about implementation across these various areas.
And Tracy Burtis, you've had this lived experience. You lost your son 5 years ago to an overdose. You yourself are a nurse, and you thought, you know, you save people for a living so you could save your son. As you look now at what's ahead for dealing with the opioid epidemic in Wisconsin, funding for you're working on this issue on the ground. So what to you is the most important funding need when it comes to the opioid epidemic, Tracy?
Well, I agree with Dr. Afshar. There's so many different things that have to be done. We are behind the eight ball here because there's so many deaths. So we can't just start with prevention. You know, we're going to have to hit everything all at once. And it's my opinion that we need to first stop the deaths and then start from the beginning, because we are really, really quite far behind in all of this.
And Dr. Salisbury Afshar, how important is funding for Narcan in this fight just to keep people alive?
I think continuing to fund naloxone I use the term naloxone because that's the generic name, but same thing as Narcan, is really critical. But I would just sort of double down on what the previous caller stated, which is that available evidence really supports that the people most likely to save someone's life are people who use drugs themselves. We know that they are likely to be around other people who use drugs. We know that they are really, really resourceful and really adept at knowing how to support their community. For my clinical practice, I solely work with people who use substances. And I know firsthand that a lot of people are really afraid to call 911 because of the potential legal repercussions. And so that's not to say that I don't think police or paramedics or others should have access to naloxone, but in terms of prioritization, all available literature would support that people who use drugs should be the first priority in terms of ensuring access.
And Tracy Burtis has mentioned you've been in this position. Can you share a little bit about what it's like for families with a loved one struggling with addiction?
Sure. There's nothing worse than feeling completely powerless to help those that you love, a life you love more than your own. And you're unable because you don't have the tools available to save them. It's horrifying for any parent and any loved one to endure that.
And was there concerns about bringing in law enforcement into the equation? Was there fears that this might not be the helpful way to go? I mean, how did you decide what to do, where to go, and who to turn to?
Well, back 5 years ago, there wasn't anywhere to go or anybody to turn to. But I hear every day, all the time, we just recently lost another one where they had started CPR and then left. And by the time the EMS got there, the young gal had brain damage and died on the way to the hospital. So it's happening all the time. And I think the more people that have the Narcan, the tools that they need to save the lives, if they have that available, the better. And that means everybody.
Tracy Burtis is the founder and president of the Beloit Advocacy Group, Families Fighting Addiction. Also joining us, Dr. Elizabeth Salisbury Afshar, specializing in opioid addiction medicine and public health at UW Health. And we'll take your calls now at 1-800-642-1234, where Lisa in Amberg standing by. Lisa, you're on Central Time.
Yes, I used to be a nurse, and I have a pet peeve. I would went through training as a nurse in the 80s when the pharmaceutical companies were convincing the doctors that you couldn't over-medicate for pain, that if a person had pain, that they would not become addicted. I specifically remember being taught that. And you have a whole generation of doctors that went through that school that may or may not be on the eight ball, so to speak. But a pet peeve I have is that we acknowledge that the pharmaceutical companies created the majority of this problem.
That's where the money came from.
The people, right? But most of the people that are victims, we acknowledge that they are victims of the pharmaceutical company, but we criminalize them. We arrest them. We put them in jail. Then they have a record, and it's even more difficult for them to function in society, to be able to find a way out. And what upsets me is we claim that we don't have the money to take care of this problem, or there's not enough money to take care of this problem. And I'm not suggesting at all defunding the police. I don't mean it that way at all. But if we put some of the money that they're spending in housing and arresting these people and feeding them in jail and made more beds available for treatment, it would help a lot more than arresting people.
Lisa, thank you so much for your perspective. Dr. Salisbury Afshar, are we doing any law enforcement-assisted diversion, this community-based diversion approach, which takes people who would be considered low-level drug or criminals and takes them into a process of beginning the treatment and recovery from addiction? Do we see that in Wisconsin?
I am not in the best position to be able to answer across the entire state regarding what is or what isn't happening as it relates to diversion and deflection. But I would just like to go back to something that was just said. And I think just say, you know, again, in working with people with addiction, this is something that I see all the time. While folks are active in their addiction, many end up getting some type of charges, often charges for sort of very small amounts of possession of substances. Sometimes people even end up, their sole charges are related to surviving an overdose. So because they have a small amount of substance or they have substance paraphernalia on them at the time of their overdose, they end up with these charges that stay with them for the rest of their lives. That then makes it harder for them to get jobs. It makes it harder for them to get housing. If they have children, it makes it harder for them to maintain custody of their kids. And it really does sort of box people into a corner in terms of future opportunities. And so, you know, again, my space is more in the sort of healthcare treatment, recovery services, harm reduction space. So I don't want to say as a blanket that this never happens anywhere in the state. But I do think it's really important to acknowledge that science and medicine really support the idea that we should be doing everything we can to support folks, and the idea that you know, simply locking people up is going to somehow help them. We don't see that play out in the evidence, and I also don't see it play out in my clinical settings. And so I think anything we can do to really try to work with folks with addiction to ensure that they have the right services and opportunities to be able to, you know, find a new path is where we should be focusing.
And Tracy Burtis, you advocate for something called a Good Samaritan law in Wisconsin. Tell us about it and what chance you might think it has of becoming a law in the state.
Well, it's something I've prayed for years, and they're still working on it, apparently. And basically, it's a blanket law that anybody that is attempting to save a life because of an overdose, and if they call the 911 and get help for that person, which is necessary, that they will not be held accountable and will not have to even answer questions about the drug use, whether or not they gave the drug to the person that overdosed, whether they have any, if they have maybe they're on probation or parole. You know, none of those questions will be asked because, doggone it, they're trying to help save a life. And that's what you're looking at, is just that with that law.
Dr. Elizabeth Salisbury Afshar, I'm making you a co-chair of the Joint Finance Committee in the Wisconsin Legislature. And so now you have the purse strings here for the next round of funding for dealing with the opioid epidemic in Wisconsin. Where would you put that money? What's your priority?
I love the idea of having the purse strings. I think that the challenge in this space is that you know, the goal should be that these funds are used to augment and supplement where other sources of funding are already going. And I will not pretend that I have that broad understanding. I will say in my work, there are a few areas that I see where we have major gaps, and I am not aware of any funding going to these areas, either through this settlement fund or through other existing funds. Specifically, one is really recovery housing. So I know that, you know, supports for residential or something that we're in here, but we see so many folks who, even if they can get access to residential treatment, when they leave residential treatment, they have nowhere to go. And going back to the streets or going back into their previous environment is really problematic. There are a lot of other things we could do on the recovery support side as it relates to job training, job placement programs. Additionally, you know, although we're putting a lot more money toward treatment services, it doesn't mean that we automatically have enough clinicians in this space. And so really ensuring that we have a pipeline for substance use counselors, for peer recovery coaches, for all types of addiction treatment professionals, to be able to train people, recruit and retrain individuals, and ideally individuals who represent the communities they're serving. So those are just a few of the areas. And then the final thing I would say on this note is that, as Tracy mentioned, you know, there is an absolute crisis at this time, and we need to simultaneously be thinking about everything, including prevention to treatment, recovery, and harm reduction. And on the prevention side, you know, we understand that living in poverty, we understand that lack of housing, we understand that lack of educational opportunities, we understand that co-occurring mental illness, all of these things increase risk for the development of addiction. This needs to be a multi-sectoral approach. We can't expect opioid settlement money to quote unquote fix everything. It has to be something where we're all coming together and thinking holistically about the services and supports that people need, both to prevent the development of addiction in the first place, but also to support people who have addiction and or are recovering from addiction.
Dr. Elizabeth Salisbury-Afshar, thank you so much for joining us. Also, Tracy Burtis, our guest this afternoon, taking a look at the opioid settlement funds available in Wisconsin and where best to put them.